The headlines: leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Khamenei, calls for unity among Muslims in his message on the annual Hajj pilgrimage. Japan's former Prime Minister Shinzo Abe dies hours after he was shot during a campaign rally in the western city of Nara. And also in our headlines, Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov dismisses what he describes as the West's frenzied criticism of the war in Ukraine at a G20 meeting. Hello and welcome, everybody. Our top story for this half hour: leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, has issued a message on the annual event of the Hajj pilgrimage calling for unity among Muslims.
In the name of God, the Beneficent, the Merciful, praise be to God, Lord of the worlds, and peace and blessings be upon our Master, the Prophet Muhammad, upon his pure progeny, and upon his chosen companions. Praise God, the Almighty and the Wise, for once again having made the blessed month of Dhu'l-Hijjah a meeting place for the Muslim nations, and for having made this path of his grace and mercy available to them. The Islamic nation can once again observe its unity and harmony in this clear, timeless mirror, and take this opportunity to turn away from the factors that lead to disunity and division. The unity of the Muslim nation is one of the two basic foundations of the Hajj pilgrimage. When combined with spirituality and the remembrance of God, which comprises the other basic foundation of this religious duty that is so full of secrets, they can lead the Islamic nation to the heights of honor and bliss. They can enable the nation to become an example of the verse, "All might belongs to Allah and His Messenger and the believers." Hajj is a combination of these two political and spiritual elements, and the sacred religion of Islam is a glorious, majestic fusion of the political and spiritual spheres. In recent history, the enemies of Muslim nations have undertaken an extensive drive to weaken the two life-giving elixirs of Islamic unity and spirituality among our nations. The enemies of Islam strive to weaken spirituality by promoting a Western lifestyle that is devoid of spirituality and which is rooted in a short-sighted, materialistic vision of the world. They strive to undermine Islamic unity by promoting and promulgating baseless factors that sow division, such as differences in language, color, race, and geography. The Islamic nation, a small portion of which can now be seen in the symbolic ritual of Hajj, must rise up against this with every ounce of its being. This means, on the one hand, we must increase remembrance of God, working for God, contemplating the words of God, and our trust in God's promises in all of our minds. And on the other hand, everyone must work to overcome factors that create division and disunity. What can be said with certainty today is that the current situation of the world and of the Islamic world is more prepared for this valuable effort than ever before. First reason is that the elites and much of the general population in Islamic countries are now aware of the great wealth of the religious understanding and spiritual heritage and of its significance and value. Today, liberalism and communism, the most significant contributions of Western civilization, no longer have the same appeal that they did 100 or 50 years ago. The credibility of capital-driven Western democracy is being seriously questioned, and Western thinkers admit that they are at a theoretical and practical loss. By observing this situation, young people, intellectuals, scientists, and religious scholars within the world of Islam are able to gain new perspectives on the wealth and value of their own knowledge, as well as on the mainstream political currents in their own countries. This is the Islamic awakening that we continually refer to. Secondly, this Islamic self-awareness has created a wondrous, miraculous phenomenon in the very heart of the Islamic world, and this poses serious problems for the arrogant powers. The name of this phenomenon is resistance, and its reality is manifested in the power of faith, struggling on the path of God and relying on Him. This is the same phenomenon about which the following noble verse was revealed in the formative period of Islam. Those to whom the people said, "All the people have gathered against you, so fear them," that only increased them in faith, and they said, "Allah is sufficient for us, and He is an excellent trustee." So they returned with Allah's blessing and grace, untouched by any harm. They pursue the pleasure of Allah, and Allah is dispenser of a great grace. The situation in Palestine is one of the manifestations of this amazing phenomenon that has been able to bring down the rebellious Zionist regime from its state of aggression and howling to a defensive, passive stance and impose on it the current obvious array of political, security, and economic problems. Other brilliant examples of Islamic resistance can be clearly seen in Lebanon, Iraq, Yemen, and some other places. Thirdly, in addition to these other factors, the world is currently witnessing to a successful and proud model of power and political Islamic governance in Islamic Iran. The stability, independence, progress, and honor of the Islamic Republic is a great, meaningful phenomenon that can attract the thoughts and feelings of every conscious Muslim. The inabilities, and at times mistaken actions of the officials of this system, mistakes which have postponed the attainment of all the blessings of Islamic governance, have never been able to shake the solid foundations or to stop the firm steps that have been taken in the path of the material and spiritual progress of the Islamic Republic, as these are inspired by the basic principles of this system. The following factors are to be found at the top of the list of these basic principles: the sovereignty of Islam in the legislative and executive branches of governance, reliance on the vote of the people in the country's most important administrative matters, complete political independence, and a refusal to rely on any oppressive powers. These principles can be the basis for a consensus between Muslim nations and governments, and they have the potential to bring unity and harmony to the Islamic nation in its direction and cooperation. These are the principles and factors that have fostered favorable conditions in the Islamic world for harmonious, unified movement. More than anyone else, Muslim governments, religious and scientific elites, independently minded intellectuals, and the truth-seeking youth should think about taking full advantage of these favorable conditions. It is natural for the arrogant powers and the United States, more than anyone else, to be worried about such a trend in the Islamic world, and for them to employ all their resources in order to confront it. And this is what we are observing. The tactics they employ range from dominating the media and soft warfare to warmongering and starting proxy wars, political espionage and acts of inducement, intimidation, bribing, and other forms of enticement. Each and every one of these tactics is employed by the United States and other arrogant powers to separate the Islamic world from its rightful path of awakening and felicity. The criminal, disgraceful Zionist regime in this region is yet another tool that they use for this all-out effort. These efforts have failed in most cases, thanks to God's grace and His will, and the arrogant West has become weaker by the day in our sensitive region and, more recently, throughout the whole world. The distress and the failure of the United States and its criminal accomplice, the usurper Zionist regime in the region, can clearly be seen in the recent events of Palestine, Lebanon, Syria, Iraq, Yemen, and Afghanistan. On the other hand, the Islamic world is brimming with motivated, energetic young people. Hope and self-confidence are the greatest assets for building the future. Today, these assets are abundant in the Islamic world, especially in this region. We all have a duty to protect and increase these precious assets. However, we should not neglect the enemy's stratagems for a single moment. Let us avoid pride and negligence, and let us increase our alertness and efforts. And at all times, let us attentively beseech the Almighty, wise God, for His help. Participating in Hajj and its rituals provides a great opportunity for relying on God and beseeching Him, as well as for deliberation and decision-making. Pray for your Muslim brothers and sisters around the world and ask for their success and victory. Please ask for divine guidance and help for this brother of yours in your pure prayers. May God's peace and mercy be upon you. Sayyid Ali Khamenei, Dua al-Hajjah, 5-14-43, July 5, 2022.
Muslim pilgrims performing the Hajj pilgrimage in Saudi Arabia are now on Mount Arafat. That's where the Prophet Muhammad delivered his final sermon. Mount Arafat is located 20 kilometers from the city of Mecca. The pilgrims ascended the site early on Friday, staying there all day praying and reciting the Holy Quran. The pilgrims converged on Mount Arafat after they spent the night in the Valley of Mena near Mecca. This year's Hajj pilgrimage is the biggest since the COVID pandemic began. 1 million Muslims, including 850,000 from outside Saudi Arabia, are taking part in the annual pilgrimage. Hajj is one of the largest annual religious gatherings in the world, and it's one of the main pillars of Islam. When we talk to political commentator Mohsen Saleh about the importance of the Hajj pilgrimage and how it helps Muslims confront Western countries' plans aimed at Islamic nations.
Muslims can unite in order to bring to themselves all kinds of peace and tranquility and deal with each other like what is happening there in Al-Hajj. So uniting people as on the micro level in Al-Hajj may mirror itself, may reflect itself in other issues. So that can really defend and confront the West from its satanic plans against Muslims. The usurpation of Palestine, the intervention of the United States in all over the Islamic world, in Yemen, in Bahrain, in Lebanon, in Syria, in Palestine, in Iraq, and trying to attack the Islamic Republic, which is representing all Muslims, and especially the leader is really his eye and his mind and his feelings and his emotions are directed towards uniting Muslims.
Well, political commentator Said Mohsen Abbas joined us earlier to give us his thoughts. He says Hajj is a symbol of equality and a stance against oppression.
The problems that Muslims face and the problems, by extension, the West faces, and what's going on in West Asia at the moment in terms of the oppression of Yemen, the oppression of the likes of the Palestinians, the oppression of Afghanistan, you know, all across that region, it's littered with the oppression of Zionists and the imperialists. For the Saudis to reject that obviously is a political move, because they're hand in glove with that very oppression. They're the ones fighting in Yemen. They're the ones funding a lot of the terrorism around that region. They're the ones who give the Americans and the Zionists a foothold in the region. And they're the ones who spread religious ideologies which sectarianize and divide. Well, the Hajj goes against the vein of all of that. And, you know, the enemies, of course, who try to weaken Islam's spirituality, who are weakening even Westerners themselves in terms of their morality and spirituality, they have this neoliberal material ideology, which again, the Hajj rejects. You can see the two pieces of cloth which Muslims wear at the Hajj, the simplicity of it, the beauty of it, and the circumambulation and the Kaaba all represent this kind of lack of materialism and this kind of alternative worldview. And I think that's what scares, certainly, the Zionist Western Empire, which is the primary problem creator across the globe today. And that's what actually empowers the resistance axis.
Japan's former Prime Minister Shinzo Abe is dead. He was shot during a campaign rally ahead of the Sunday vote for the upper house. Abe was gunned down earlier on Friday while giving a speech in the western city of Nara. He served as Japan's Prime Minister from 2006 to 2007 and from 2012 to 2020. The attacker has been identified and is said to be a former member of the Japanese Navy. He's in custody now. Prime Minister Fumio Kishida said Abe's death was, quote, regrettable. Countries around the globe have expressed shock and concern. Iran has condemned the assassination as a terrorist attack. Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdollahian said the late premier was, quote, an outstanding politician. The Iranian minister hailed what he called Abe's valuable contribution to the development of ties between Tehran and Tokyo. Japanese political analyst Seijiro Takeshita says gun violence is very rare in Japan, and that's why the attack on Abe is so shocking.
In Japan, we don't have gun crimes, period. I mean, last year, according to the police, there's been only one death by, you know, gun in Japan. The year before that, only four. And most of it is due to the mobs. So this isn't our, you know, daily incident that we face. And to have that to Mr. Abe, who has served this country the longest than anybody else, over 2,880 days, and to who also created a lot of positive legends, like, you know, Abenomics, for example. You know, to have him being shot in middle of the street while he's making a speech is, firstly, totally unacceptable, and also, secondly, very devastating. Again, this is Japan. It's not United States, where you know, often find people holding guns. Again, only one death last year on gun crimes in Japan. So I would have imagined that, you know, most of the SBs didn't think, you know, that anybody would have a gun shooting at him. Possibly, you know, knives or machetes, as you just pointed out earlier, but certainly not guns.
Russia's defense ministry spokesman says his country's forces have destroyed two British-supplied anti-ship missile systems in Ukraine's Odessa region. Russia's foreign minister has dismissed what he termed the West's frenzied criticism of the war in Ukraine at a G20 meeting.
Despite all this, and useful discussions that should allow us to ask some very blunt questions to our Western colleagues, they have no answers to these questions. There is only rabid Russophobia, which they turn into instead of finding much-needed common ground on key issues on the global economy and finances, for which the G20 was created.
Speaking to reporters in the Indonesian resort island of Bali, Lavrov said many disparaging terms such as aggressors, invaders, and occupiers were thrown around. He scolded Western powers for wasting an opportunity to tackle global economic issues, saying they strayed from the subject almost immediately. Earlier, Lavrov also said he would not chase after the U.S. for talks, as his counterpart, Antony Blinken, declined to see him at the summit. And that brings us to an end here on this edition of World News. Do stay tuned, though. Bye.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Limelight. New research has shown the effects of human-caused global heating are blocking vital winter rains in Spain and Portugal, with severe implications for farming and tourism on the Iberian Peninsula. The article you're about to hear has been written by The Guardian's environment editor Damien Carrington. The piece is titled Spain and Portugal Suffering Driest Climate for 1,200 Years, Research Shows. Spain and Portugal are suffering their driest climate for at least 1,200 years, according to new research with severe implications for both food production and tourism in both countries. Most rain on the Iberian Peninsula falls in winter, as wet, low-pressure systems blow in from the Atlantic Ocean. But a high-pressure system off the coast, called the Azores High, can block the wet weather fronts. The Azores High is a semi-permanent area of high pressure that migrates east and west, depending on the season. During the Northern Hemisphere summer and autumn, the center of the Azores High is located in the western North Atlantic Ocean, near the island of Bermuda. In the winter and early spring, it is primarily centered near the Azores, in the eastern part of the North Atlantic Ocean. The researchers found that winters featuring extremely large Azores highs have increased dramatically from one winter in 10 before 1850 to one winter in 4 since 1980. These extremes also pushed the wet weather northwards, making downpours in northern United Kingdom and Scandinavia more likely. The scientists said the more frequent Azores high could only have been caused by climate crisis, caused by humanity's carbon emissions. The number of extremely large Azores High in the last 100 years is really unprecedented when you look at the previous 1,000 years, said Dr. Caroline Umerhofer at the Woods Hole Oceanographic Institution in the United States and part of the new research team. That has big implications because an extremely large Azores High means relatively dry conditions for the Iberian Peninsula and for the Mediterranean region, she said. We could also conclusively link this increase to anthropogenic emissions. The Iberian Peninsula has been hit by increasing heat waves and droughts in recent years, and this year, the month of May was the hottest on record in Spain. Forest fires that killed dozens of people in the region in 2017 followed a heatwave made 10 times more likely by the climate crisis, while the Tagus River, the longest river in the region, is at risk of drying up completely, according to environmentalists. The new research published in the journal Nature Geoscience analyzed weather data stretching back to 1850 and computer models replicating the climate back to AD 850. It found that before 1850 and the start of significant human greenhouse gas emissions, extremely large Azores highs occurred once every 10 years on average. From 1850 to 1980, the frequency was once every 7 years, but after 1980, this rose to every 4 years. Data showed that extremely large Azores highs slash average monthly rainfall in winter by about a third. Further data from chemical analysis of stalagmites in caves in Portugal showed that low rainfall correlates closely with large Azores highs. The computer simulation of the climate of the past millennium covers a period up to 2005, but other studies covering later years are consistent with the new findings, and the Azores High is expected to continue to expand, further increasing drought on the Iberian Peninsula, until global carbon emissions are cut to net zero. Our findings have big implications for the water resources that are available for agriculture and other water-intensive industries or for tourism, said Caroline Umehofer. It doesn't bode well. Spain was the second most popular country for overseas tourists in 2019, hosting 84 million visitors. Spain also is the world's biggest producer of olives and a major source of grapes, oranges, tomatoes and other produce. But rainfall has been declining in Spain by 5 to 10 millimetres a year since 1950, with a further 10 to 20% drop in winter rains anticipated by the end of the century. Other research has projected a 30% decline in olive production in southern Spain by 2100 and a fall in grape-growing regions across the Iberian Peninsula of 25% to 99% by 2050 due to severe water shortages. Research in 2021 also linked the Azores High to the summer monsoon in India.
Seventh Imam, Imam Musa al-Kazim alayhi salatu wa salam, is actually known as Bab al-Hawaij.
قال الإمام الكاظم عليه السلام خير الأمور أوسطها.
Ziyarah of Imam Musa ibn Ja'far al-Kazim alayhi salam.
السلام عليك يا مولاي موسى ابن جعفر ورحمة الله.
This is Dialogue, a program on the famous conversations of Imam Musa al-Kazim alayhi salam.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome, dear listeners. I'm your host, Mahdi, and we're talking about the dialogues of Imam al-Kazim alayhi salam. Imam Musa ibn Ja'far al-Kazim alayhi salam was the direct descendant of the Holy Prophet Muhammad, peace and blessings upon him and his holy household. And Imam al-Kazim alayhi salam was also the seventh divinely appointed imam from among the household of the Holy Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa alihi wa sallam. Now, it is interesting to know that Imam Musa al-Kazim alayhi salam was the testamentary trustee and he was the seventh divinely appointed successor, vice-regent, imam of the Holy Prophet Muhammad. Imam Musa ibn Ja'far al-Kazim alayhi salam was also the testamentary trustee and the only successor of the sixth divinely appointed imam, Imam Ja'far ibn Muhammad as-Sadiq alayhi salam. It is interesting, but we find in the life of Imam al-Kazim alayhi salam that he went through great ordeals, difficulties, trials, tribulations, troublesome afflictions, and it was not limited to these. Matter of fact, Imam al-Kazim was held hostage in prisons. He was put through pain and torture, and it can be said that he was very much like the Messiah, Isa ibn Maryam, in his devotions, his piety, and his asceticism. These are his dialogues.
Thank you.
قال الإمام الكاظم عليه السلام: إن الله عز وجل لم يحرم الخمر لاسمها، ولكنه حرمها لعاقبتها، فما كان عاقبته عاقبة الخمر فهو خمر.
Imam al-Kazim alayhi salam stated, Allah did not prohibit alcohol because of its name. Rather, He prohibited it due to its effects. So whatever produces the same effects as alcohol is treated as alcohol.
Welcome back, dear listeners. It's great to have you with us. You're listening to Dialogue on IRIB English Radio. Dear friends, when we're talking about the beautiful dialogues of Imam al-Kadhim alayhi salam, the seventh divinely appointed Imam, we find that Imam al-Kadhim alayhi salam discussed the righteousness of a supreme ruler, or the righteousness of a sultan, a king, the one in authority. Now, when he was talking with his companions, of course, because during the time of Imam al-Kadhim alayhi salam, we find that the Abbasid caliphs were at the helm of the authority of the Muslims. And so it is interesting, of course, because among the Muslims, this discussion about what kind of sultan or what kind of authority is the best kind of authority was something that was discussed amongst the Muslims at that time. The Umayyads had been dethroned and the Abbasid caliphs had come in. And so there was this question among the people on what kind of ruler is the best kind of ruler. And so Imam al-Kadhim alayhi salam in this conversation says that, surely your righteousness, that means the righteousness of the people, results from the righteousness of the supreme ruler, the sultan, the one in authority. And the supreme ruler, this sultan, and this authority is just like a merciful father. Now, before we continue with the rest of this conversation, just at this point, we realize so many beautiful and subtle points. One, that the righteousness of the people depends upon the righteousness of the ruler. And this is what we see all across the world. That when a ruler or a person in authority, such as a president or a king or a queen or a prime minister or a governor or a mayor, when these individuals who are in authority are not righteous, rather they are corrupt morally and ethically, and we find that the people will also start to become morally and ethically corrupt. And likewise, when the leaders are righteous, then the people also become righteous, slowly but surely. And then Imam al-Kadhim says that this ruler, this authority should be and is like a merciful father. Is this what we see across the world? Are the authorities and the powers that are in control, are they like merciful fathers? Or are they more like tyrannical governments who are oppressing and tyrannizing the people that are under them? And then if a ruler is righteous and the ruler acts like a merciful father, then Imam al-Kadhim alayhi salam says, love for that ruler and authority what you love for yourselves, and hate for that authority that which you would hate for yourselves. A righteous ruler is truly something that is needed in every single corner of this planet in the present day. This is Dialogue, Imam al-Kadhim alayhi salam.
IRIB English Radio. You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
And now we invite you to listen to Sheikh Hamza Sodagar.
The aspect of, or I should say, one of the aspects that made the imama of Imam al-Kadhim, salamullah alayhi, very critical is the conditions that ended up being the conditions of the ummah and the conditions of the movements of the Ahlul Bayt during that period. One of the things we see, just to give us an example so we can understand a little better perhaps, because the conditions of the time of Imam al-Kadhim are so far away and we haven't experienced, and there's not much that we can get our hands on. If you look at a contemporary example of a movement that was similar in many ways, in fact it was the continuation of the movement of the Ahlul Bayt, using the methods and the tactics of the Ahlul Bayt, was the movement of Imam Khomeini. Imam Khomeini spoke against the regime with provocative language and took stances against the regime. Others would decide that it's better if we speak in a softer tone. Imam Khomeini deliberately. That tone of Imam Khomeini rallied up and gave courage to a good number of people, gave them the energy. They had the ideological foundations. They knew what was happening was wrong, but they didn't have the motivation to come forward. When they see that leader speaking in that way, they came forward. With that, Imam Khomeini was imprisoned, the initial stages of it. Imprisonment, if he would stand strong in prison, which he did, and getting that data out, that will encourage more people to come forward, which it did. And it forced the government to have to release him. After they released him, Imam Khomeini continued and took more firm stances against the regime. They sent him to exile. In exile, he continued those strong stances. And this led to more and more people.
Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of Dialogue. Don't forget to visit our website at farstoday.com/EN, Call of Islam page, where you can find all of our previous programs and many others as well. Until another episode, fi amanillah, and God bless you all.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Limelight.
In a lawsuit, Dominion Voting Systems accuses Fox Corporation and Rupert Murdoch specifically of allowing Fox News to amplify false claims that the voting company had rigged the U.S. election for Joe Biden. We have prepared for you an article written by Adam Gabbert. The piece is titled Fox and Friends Confront Billion-Dollar U.S. Lawsuits Over Election Fraud Claims. In the months following the 2020 U.S. presidential election, right-wing television news in America was a wild west, an apparently lawless free-for-all where conspiracy theories about voting machines, ballot-stuffed suitcases, and dead Venezuelan leaders were repeated to viewers around the clock. There seemed to be little consequence for peddling the most outrageous ideas on prime time. But now, unfortunately for Fox News Channel, One America News Network, and Newsmax, it turns out that this fact, New World, wasn't free from legal jurisdiction, with the three networks now facing billion-dollar lawsuits as a result of their accusations. In June, Dominion Voting Systems, which provided voting machines to 28 states, was given the go-ahead to sue Fox News Corporation, the parent company of Fox News, in a case that could draw Rupert Murdoch and his son, Lachlan Murdoch, into the spotlight. In the $1.6 billion lawsuit, Dominion Voting Systems accuses Fox Corporation and the Murdochs specifically of allowing Fox News to amplify false claims that the voting company had rigged the election for Joe Biden. Fox Corporation has attempted to have the lawsuit dismissed, but a Delaware judge said Dominion Voting Systems had shown adequate evidence for the lawsuit to proceed. Dominion is already suing Fox News as well as One America News Network and Newsmax. Judge Eric Davis said these allegations support a reasonable inference that Rupert Murdoch and Lachlan Murdoch either knew Dominion had not manipulated the election or at least recklessly disregarded the truth when they caused Fox News to propagate its claims about Dominion. Judge Eric Davis's ruling is not a guarantee that Fox Corp will be found liable, but the judge made it clear that this isn't some frivolous attempt by Dominion, and media and legal experts think Fox Corp could be in real trouble. Chiara Torres-Peliski, a professor who teaches constitutional law at Stetson University and a fellow of the Brennan Center for Justice, a nonpartisan law and policy institute, said, Dominion Voting Systems has a very strong case against Fox News and against One America News Network, for that matter. Chiara Torres-Peliski said the reason Dominion is suing is because Fox and other right-wing news outlets repeated vicious lies that Dominion voting machines stole the 2020 election from Donald Trump for Joe Biden. But all of these conspiracy theories about Dominion's voting machines were just pure nonsense. And Fox News, as a news organization, should have known that and not given this aspect of the big lie a megaphone. Torres-Peliski added, what's particularly bad for Fox News is that Dominion asked them to stop and correct the record in real time. And Fox News persisted in spreading misrepresentations about the voting machine company. Indeed, in his ruling, Judge Eric Davis noted that other newspapers under Rupert Murdoch's control, including the Wall Street Journal and the New York Post, condemned President Trump's claims and urged him to concede defeat. In a statement, a Fox News spokesperson claimed, limiting the ability of the press to report freely on the American election process stands in stark contrast to the liberties on which this nation was founded. And we are confident we will prevail in this case as the First Amendment is the foundation of our democracy and freedom, freedom of the press must be protected. A potential precedent in the Dominion voting systems versus Fox case could be found in a recent case involving Sarah Palin, who sued the New York Times. Sarah Palin claimed the newspaper maliciously damaged her reputation by erroneously linking her campaign rhetoric to a mass shooting incident. In February, a jury sided with the New York Times, finding that a New York Times employee had not acted with actual malice against a public figure or with reckless disregard for the truth, the criteria necessary to prove defamation. But Chiara Torres-Spelisky said the New York Times victory shouldn't give Fox too much hope, adding, in the Sarah Palin case, the New York Times quickly corrected the mistake about Palin that had been added while an article was edited. Torres-Spelisky noted, by contrast, Fox News Channel kept up the bad behavior and repeatedly told myths about Dominion's voting machines. This is likely why judges in several of these Dominion defamation cases have not dismissed them. Dominion Voting System isn't the only company seeking damages from Fox and its contemporaries. Smartmatic, an election software company which provided voting software to precisely one county in the 2020 election, but found itself subjected to claims that it was founded for the specific purpose of fixing elections by associates of Hugo Chavez, the former president of Venezuela who died in 2013, is suing Fox Corporation, Fox News, and associates for $2.7 billion. Still, some officials claiming Fox News is the most watched and arguably most influential cable news channel in the United States, and is probably too big to fail. But that isn't the case for the smaller right-wing networks, the One America News Network and Newsmax, which are also both being sued by Dominion Voting Systems and Smartmatic. In June, a Delaware judge refused Newsmax's motion to have the Dominion case dismissed, but did not weigh on whether Newsmax was innocent or guilty. Angelo Carissoni, president and chief executive of Media Matters for America, which monitors right-wing media, said, "I think the One America News Network is going to be wiped out from the litigation costs. Forget about any judgment." Angelo Carissoni pointed out that the One America News Network is already struggling to survive after it was dropped by the DirecTV cable company, which was reportedly responsible for 90% of One America News Network's revenues in April, adding, "Already we've started seeing them scaling back programming. They've been laying off staff, they've been cutting back on the number of programs. So it's pretty clear that they don't have sufficient resources to weather a protracted litigation process." Angelo Carissoni, president and chief executive of Media Matters for America, said Newsmax, which is still carried by DirecTV, is relatively cash flush in comparison to the One America News Network, enough to survive a trial, if not to pay the billions of dollars Dominion and Smartmatic are seeking. In a statement, Newsmax said it had reported on allegations made by President Trump and his surrogates, "and at no time did we report these allegations were true. We also reported on critics of the Trump claims." It added, "The Dominion lawsuit is an assault on a free press and endangers all press outlets if it were to prevail." The One America News Network did not respond to a request for comment. Angelo Carissoni, president and chief executive of Media Matters for America, added, "As for Fox News Channel, the most significant thing could be if the Murdochs are subjected to discovery, where they and Fox could be forced to hand over documents, potentially including communications data, as part of the legal process. Text messages obtained by the January 6th Commission have already revealed that there was communication between Fox News hosts and White House officials regarding the January 6th insurrection, and it seems unlikely that that is the only thing that was discussed. Angela Carissoni said, "I think once you start to pull the discovery material, what you're going to find is there was a lot of communication between the Trump people, both internally and externally, about pushing very specific lies and narratives. While Fox is more financially comfortable than the One America News Network and Newsmax, it is not invulnerable. Fox News Network is due to renegotiate its contracts with cable providers at the end of this year, and Angela Carissoni said cable companies could use the lawsuit to drive down prices. The Dominion voting systems and Smartmatic cases are likely to drag on for some time, and it remains to be seen how Fox News, the One America News Network and Newsmax will react.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. 25 meters, 11,865 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent, and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5, and via the Internet. Our Internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Every night and every day, every night and every day, never forget to say, La ilaha illallah, never forget to say, La ilaha illallah.
IRIB English Radio, a herald of unity and solidarity amongst Islamic denominations.
Oh Lord, here I am, pleading at your door. Send me your mercy, send me your peace, or I am lost for sure.
Hadith of the day.
Here I am, yearning for your cure. This humble servant will be diverted from you no more, no more, no more.
You're listening to the program Hadith of the Day with Dr. Shiraz Hossein Agha on IRIB English Radio.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome to our program Hadith of the Day here at IRIB English Radio. Today on Hadith of the Day, we're going to be looking at a very beautiful and a very informative hadith and tradition which has been narrated from Imam Ali alayhi salam regarding the virtue and the benefit of trade and business. As you know, Islam is a religion of reason, and Islam is a balanced religion. This is one of the distinguishing characteristics and distinctions of Islam. It's not an extreme religion that, you know, encourages its followers to relinquish the world and, you know, forego everything in order to reach salvation in the hereafter, right? And contrary to a lot of maybe Eastern religions or, you know, a lot of, you know, sects within certain Abrahamic religions. Rather, it's a religion which gives due importance to people's, you know, lives in this world, and even considers these other aspects of the lives of the people to be forms of worship. And an instance of that, an extension of that, is this very concept of trade being something virtuous. In the Quran, we read the following verse regarding trade. Gala Mai says, O you who have faith, do not eat up your wealth amongst yourselves unrightfully. This is a very famous verse. لا تأكلوا أموالكم بينكم بالباطل. But it should be trade by mutual consent. You know, don't squander your wealth. Trade amongst yourselves. Conduct business amongst yourselves. And do not kill yourselves. Indeed, Allah is the most merciful to you. Right? So this is in general terms. That kind of alludes to the virtuousness and the virtue of trade. Imam Ali alayhi salam, echoing the same theme, the same Quranic concept, he says the following. Practice the various trades, for there is in them independence for you from what is in the hands of others. Meaning, instead of, you know, asking people for money, for borrowing it from them, you know, begging other people, asking for their help, conduct trade, conduct business, and in this way, not only will you secure your, you know, needs, worldly needs, but also you will be independent and have, you know, certain nobility and honor, and your respect in the eyes of the people will be preserved. Then the Imam said the following, and indeed Allah loves the one gainfully engaged in a profession. Wa inna Allaha yuhibbul muhtariq al-amin. The person who engages in a profession, he has a job, right? He doesn't sit around and, you know, beg people for money or rely on other people, you know, to live. Such a person is loved by Allah. He's beloved by Allah. Thank you for joining us here on Hadith of the Day. We were looking at the virtue of trade and commerce in the words of Imam Ali alayhi salam. Until next time, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Dr. Shiraz Hossein Agha for the program Hadith of the Day on RIB English Radio.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد
Doing us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
It's called the New Force Model by NATO, in which it says it is a new strategic concept, one that describes Russia as the most significant and direct threat to allies' security.